My darling, it's time to put a stop to all the madness. You deserve so much more in your life. It's your time to glow up. Welcome to the Time to Glow Up podcast with Rebecca Hennings and guests. Your journey to transforming from the inside out begins here.
So I am so happy to be speaking to Wole Oladipo. I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Yes, you've done a good job.
I've been practicing. I met Wole a few weeks ago. Oh, by the way, hi, everybody. This is the Time to Glow Up podcast. I'm forgetting my manners. You're listening to Rebecca Hemmings of the Time to Glow Up podcast. And I met Wole a few weeks ago in Birmingham as he was leading a course on the brain trauma and recovery. And given my experience, having had cancer and having gone through my own trauma experience, I was very keen, and given the work that I do as well, I was very keen to find out more and get to grips with what that was about. And I was far from disappointed. I was actually really overjoyed, and simply because I just came away knowing a whole lot more about what trauma does to the brain, and having a clearer understanding of what was actually happening to me during my time, but also being able to look at other people and see what's happening with them, and also coming away with a range of tools, knowing that actually you might have gone through something like that, but there's things you can do. So that was really, really useful. So I thought, oh my gosh, after attending the course, I need to speak to this man and gain more of your knowledge. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So you are the director and of Mind Body Breakthrough.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a bit more about Mind Body Breakthrough before we get into this.
Yeah, it's Mind Body Breakthrough. It's an organization that focuses on collaborating with the human mind for the alleviation of the psychological sufferings like trauma, anxiety, PTSD, chronic stress, and different other psychopathological issues. So we run workshops and consultations for charities, organizations, for businesses all across the country and overseas.
Yeah.
So we've been focusing on helping people.
Yeah. And you know, you seem to be doing very well. I mean, you guys seem to be all over the place. There are courses run up and down the country, and now you're essentially in lockdown. How are you coping?
It's been tough. Yeah. It's been tough, but I'm very glad that we already have an online platform.
Yes.
So we've just switched all our operations online, and people understand.
Yeah.
They understand the fact that we have to adapt. And
yes.
People have been consuming the online workshops, online consultations, and we've had fabulous feedback. So thanks for asking.
No, you're very welcome. I love the fact that you practice what you preach. I mean, I came away from your course having bought four books. And one of them is about taking your work online as an entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So the fact that you're doing it is brilliant. Okay. So one thing, you know, I realized, or I saw pretty quickly, is that you're very, very passionate about this area. You're very, very passionate about the brain, anxiety, trauma, and all the other wonderful, or not so wonderful stuff, I guess. What is it that has led you to this work?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I had trauma. Growing up in Nigeria, West Africa, my dad got married to 13 wives. 29 of us, the siblings, you know, I have brothers and sisters. So we lived in an impoverished environment, no money, no anything. We're always on the streets.
Mm.
And we went through some horrific situations growing up. We became bad kids.
Mm.
You know, the kids that the entire community would be avoiding.
Mm.
So we went through some traumatic events, a lot of grueling events growing up. And that shaped my focus.
Mm.
I remember when I became a teenager, I think around 14 or 15, I was still very, very lost in the world of anxiety and trauma. But as I was growing up, I remember being 19 and wanting to help other people, you know, joining charities, and eventually that shaped my education into psychology. Then I'm now a psychotherapist. So it's always been the fact that I suffered.
Yes.
And I wanted to help other people to understand their minds better.
Wow. There are so many questions, especially there's that big question about, you know, two different people experiencing something similar, and one can take the path of wanting to help others and doing really positive things with their lives, and then the other person just completely, I guess, for want of a better word, failing in life. But I'm not going to ask you that question, because there's something more fresh, more pressing, and that is what's going on right now with people and this COVID-19 pandemic. There are obviously, you know, everybody is, I think, obviously the penny's finally dropping with McDonald's closing today. I think, you know, a lot of people have their eyes today with McDonald's closing. But yeah, I think we're about to hear an announcement. At the time of this recording, Boris Johnson is in a COBRA meeting and is shortly about to make another big announcement. I'm pretty sure a lot of people think that it's going to be, lockdown, complete lockdown, unless you're shocked.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So with regards to this, there's a lot of people who are feeling panicked, feeling fearful. How can you not feel that with something so huge, with so many people dying on a daily basis, particularly in Europe? How can you not be panicked and fearful?
That's a good question. Now, we do know that the human mind is wired. The human brain is wired around survival. Mm. Survival is the number one priority of our neurological tissues. So we are designed for survival. So when the survival brain kicks in, the thinking brain goes offline.
I remember this. And that was the prefrontal cortex goes offline. That's right. Yeah, the hippocampus and the amygdala. Yes, I got this. Yeah, sorry,
Karen. You've been practicing.
You taught me very well.
Now, that explains part of the reason why people panic buy. You know, why would you be buying toilet rolls when there are other precious stuff that could have been bought? So we regress into our irrational brain. That is about survival. It's about autopilot. We are not being run by the ingrained survival, hardwire, primitive brain. But the threat of the virus, of the coronavirus, is very real, because we can see the numbers.
Yes.
Now, if you listen to the conspiracy theorists, I just spoke. In Southend-on-Sea, just 2 days ago, I got to my hotel room, and the guy who was checking me in at the Hilton Watford was a conspiracy theorist, and he just lectured me that all these things were they were set up by China and stuff like that, and now China is good. Now they want to start to build their economy. So that they could overtake everybody.
Mm.
You know, people have different ideas, but what we do know is that there are deaths everywhere. So people have that genuine reason to be really concerned.
Yes.
With their loved ones, about their own lives.
Yeah.
And that happens to feed straight into the amygdala system.
Yeah.
So when we're afraid, and the fear, whether it's imagined or real, we increase the activity of the survival center, the fear and anxiety center, and that starts to modulate how our neurons react. The brain will start to produce negative chemicals, and those chemicals will eventually go into the hypothalamic center, the chemical factory. And they become feelings. They start to feel panicky.
All these messages are sent from the brain, and they then become feelings.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, the hypothalamic center. I don't know whether you remember on the course. That is the place where thinking becomes feeling.
Right.
That's why we ask young people, not to focus on negative thinking, because when you think thoughts are electrochemical impulses that have been taken in the chemical factory, the hypothalamic center. Mm-hmm. And by the time the chemicals file out of the assembly line, they've become feelings, negative feelings.
And this is so serious. And this is what scares me in a way, because I know that when you are feeling stressed for a long period of time, and this is going to go on for a little while, that your body again reacts in a different way. Your body reacts to that stress, starts to produce cortisol, your immune system is lowered, and then you're then open to other sorts of diseases. I mean, you can speak more on that, but other problems can happen as a result of that negative thing.
Yes. We're not just facing a psychological issue.
Mm.
We're facing biochemical issues.
Mm.
You just explained that correlation there. So when the cortisol levels increase drastically, as I'm sure our collective cortisol levels have gone, off the roof.
Yeah.
So when we produce too much cortisol, which is the which is a stress hormone, what happens is that depresses the immune system functions, and the immune system is critical to our first line of defense with regards to the foreign invaders, bacteria, viruses, fungi, and many other foreign invaders. So once the immune system is compromised, then we are more susceptible, as you've said, to diseases, to even to coronavirus.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because the natural killer cells have no energy to do their job.
Yeah. Wow. So how, if you're in the moment and you realize, okay, I'm taking too much toilet paper here. I heard what Wale said. He says, I'm panicking in the moment. What do you do when you realize this is what you're doing? What could you do in that moment to calm yourself down?
Now, if you are in a survival mode, the first thing to do is to realize that you're in a survival mode. You have to verbalize that.
Yes.
Say something like, I think I am in a survival mode. I'm in survival right now. So you take a few deep breaths.
Yeah.
And you try to ground yourself.
Mm.
So you ease back to your body, because we dissociate in a state of survival. We dissociate into a state of that autopilot state within our mind, within our subconscious mind.
Mm.
And it's like we're being run by a hardwired primordial brain.
Yeah.
So the first thing is to acknowledge that you are in a state of you're in survival.
Yes.
So that acknowledgement brings up your thinking brain to engaging with you again.
Right. And then you're thinking rationally again.
Yes.
Right. That makes sense. That makes complete
sense. It's always good, because what happens is that if you are still in a subconscious state, you continue to obey that autopilot effect.
Yeah.
So you break the preoccupation by saying, okay, wait a minute, what am I doing? I think I'm in survival.
Mm-hmm. And also, what I found quite interesting in what you were saying on the course was that when we're in that survival mode and we're panicking and fearful, we tend to not breathe as deeply. And you just mentioned briefly again there. And I remember that you said that it's not so much oxygen goes to the brain, and so that we don't get the full use. I mean, I guess it's the same thing, really, in that we don't get the full use of our brain. Therefore, you're not as smart in that moment.
That's right. Now, what happens is that, as I've mentioned before, the entire brain is designed for survival.
Mm.
So when we press our survival button, when something in the environment stresses us out and we start to panic, and we activate our fight, flight, nervous system.
Mm.
So that moment, the distribution of the oxygenated blood flow is no longer even.
Mm.
So now Mother Nature favors the regions of the brain and body.
Yes.
That are directly involved in survival. Just like what Nicola Sturgeon just said today. He said, well, if you close every shop, unless what you sell is directly connected to helping with the COVID-19, like food, like medicine, it's the same thing that the body does.
Yeah.
It shut down other areas that are very important, but not directly involved in the survival activity. Unfortunately, your thinking brain is not directly involved, and it consumes too much energy.
Yes.
So it's the first one to go offline.
Shut down. I get it. I love the way you put things. I love that. Okay, so on a, what do you think? Because obviously there are huge, huge implications with regards to people's mental health, short-term and long-term. What do you think? I mean, this is so unprecedented in terms of the scale of this. We're all going through this at the same time. What do you think, in your experience, might be some of the long-term implications of having gone through this experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. One thing I was thinking about today, actually, in that line, is that I wonder how we're going to react to protecting the integrity of the most important power that we have as humans, and that is the power of connection and intimacy. And you realize that one of our powerful tools for survival, for thriving, for self-engagement, which is connection and community, is what the coronavirus is capitalizing on to spread.
Yes.
So I was just thinking, I hope even when the coronavirus is over, people will not have been programmed for social distancing.
I thought the same thing, because I saw that, you know, in China they're coming through this, but they're still wearing masks, for instance. And, you know, and I just wondered, like, will people, like, continuously, like you say, like, stay 2 meters away from one another, not hug, not shake hands anymore? Like, is that all over? Oh, my gosh.
It could be a test of character, because the longer the social distancing goes, the harder the hardwired brain becomes.
Yes.
So people start to think online, think separation, think disconnection, as opposed to connection and integration and face to face.
Yes.
You can see the entire world is moving into the online arena now, or the online communication companies are prospering.
Even with that, like, before all of this was happening, there has been a lot of talk about what sort of effect being on social media, using Facebook and the likes of Instagrams and all of that, instead of actually, you know, and WhatsApp, instead of picking up the phone and speaking to someone,
That
can have a mental health. So have you come across any evidence to suggest that that does diminish your mental health, having spending a long time on the computer and so forth?
Yes, we have some evidence that the overconsumption of electronics, of the virtual world, will actually take away from the social connectedness, interconnectedness that studies have shown to be very powerful for the brain. The studies have shown that isolation from real people gives us a smaller brain. So the brain shrinks when you are not in touch with others. And when it comes to the brain, you need a huge brain.
Yes.
Size matters when it comes to the brain.
Yes, indeed.
So because a small brain cannot regulate your emotions properly, cannot activate your cognitive functions properly, cannot help cannot help to supervise the entire brain and bodily systems.
Yes.
So we do know that some studies in that area that lack of, you know, face-to-face interactions might be having some adverse effects in our brain system. Yeah. And also, eventually, if you don't socialize, if you, depending on the nature of the program that we watch or the games that we play, that could infuse aggression, especially in children.
Yes.
I'm sure you know this. When you ask your child to come off the game,
Yes.
And come and have dinner, or come and socialize with other people.
Yeah.
You realize that he or she is like in a different mood.
Oh man, it's not so fair and all of that.
Yeah, no. So I think balance is key.
Yes.
But in this era of the coronavirus, we have no choice. That becomes the first line that becomes a go-to place.
Yes.
For us to maintain our appropriate social distancing.
And you know, I guess even those of us who have laptops and phones and are able to connect in that way, we're quite lucky. But I think of people like my grandmother. She doesn't use a laptop. She doesn't use a mobile phone that can take pictures. She's now having to self-isolate because she's in the vulnerable group for 12 weeks. And wow. I know she has lots of children and grandchildren, and we call her. But, you know, she is isolated. Is there anything someone in her position can do to kind of minimize some of these symptoms or minimize the dangers of self-isolation?
Now, there's no substitute to community and connection. Mm. We have to find a way to connect with mom and dad or your grandmom, possibly virtually.
Yeah.
You know, if she's got a phone or somebody could arrange something.
Yes.
You know, isolation is one of the critical factors for early death. You know, it's something that we just have to fight against. But because the government prioritizes this, because they realize that the risks of not self-isolating the vulnerable people are greater than, you know, just letting people just do whatever they want to connect and everything like that. But if we can still look for different ways to connect with them, just like what we're doing right now, it could be FaceTime, it could be telephone. They love the telephones.
And she,
you know, in our company, we call people up. We call the elderly people up, and some of them will call us up just wanting to chat.
Yes.
So, and they will stay for almost forever.
So
perhaps we could use the telephone.
Yes.
If they have access to that, just to always make sure that we keep in touch every day to keep the mind going. Yes.
And we are definitely doing that. It's the mind boggles. All right. So we've spoken about the fact that there are so many issues related to people not having that connectivity, that physical connectivity. So what is it? We're in this situation, whether we like it or not. We're in this situation. What can we do to help calm the mind when we're feeling particularly frantic, maybe on a regular basis? I know that, again, you took us through on your course some meditations you had created, and that's one way of doing things. Actually, I wouldn't mind if you would, before you come up with some other options, is if you can talk about the benefit of meditation and mindfulness, because I think a lot of people think it's for those people over there.
Yes.
And I used to be one of those people until I started using it myself, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yes. Now, meditation has been extremely researched. I mean, hardcore scientific research to boost blood flow to the brain.
Mm.
You know, when you boost your blood flow, when you boost blood to the brain, you bring the prefrontal cortex back online.
Mm.
So the prefrontal cortex is the seat of our awareness, and it requires adequate blood flow, oxygen and glucose, very, very critical.
Yes.
And the way you deliver the oxygen and the glucose to the brain, to the brain neurons, is through your circulatory system. So that means there has to be enough blood flow to the brain. And meditation does that. Also, it reduces the cortisol levels.
Yes.
And some studies have shown from Harvard that it actually protects the cortical cover of the neurons in the brain. So that means the insulation.
Yes.
Each neuron is insulated.
Yes.
So that the fidelity of the information, the communication in between neurons could be protected. So that means your brain communicates with itself properly.
Okay.
So that you will not have a leakage of information from one place to another. For example, if one place is sending relaxation signals before it gets to the other side, it's leaked out.
Yes.
If the cortical thickness of the neurons in the hippocampus, your memory center, is very exposed. So studies have shown that people who meditate regularly, their cortical thickness is denser than the average.
Right.
So that means that you're more likely to protect your memory. And also you have some kind of resilience factor against brain degenerative disease, such as Alzheimer's disease.
Yes.
So it actually, meditation communicates with the amygdala, which is the fear and anxiety center.
Yes.
That you are not in danger. So if you do it regularly, you're trying to renegotiate with the amygdala to downgrade your threat levels.
Yeah.
So before you know it, your overall somatic symptoms of anxiety and depression will start to drop. So we actually recommend that. In fact, just last week, I did a 45-minute long special meditation for the COVID-19. It's on our website, mindbodybreakthrough.net, just for free.
Yes.
You know, and I have a script for therapists as well. They want to, if they want to modify that to help their clients. It's incredible that at this time, we start our day with some kind of meditation to prepare the body into that state of relaxation, so that whatever happens to you during the day, you are resilient.
I mean, that's amazing that you have that. You've just given that away. So it's mindbodybreakthrough.net, and I will make sure that information is included in this episode on the website. I can hear what some people are going to say. They're going to say, 45 minutes, that's a long time. Obviously, even though you mentioned all those benefits, but maybe people don't have time. What's the minimum amount of meditation you can do per day?
Do you know what? Do you know, that's what I thought before. Then I realized that we're all going to be locked up in the house.
No excuse.
So we usually do 5 minutes for people at all. You have no excuse.
Yes.
Now, a lot of other things that I've done in that 45 minutes meditation for COVID-19 is to work with people's subconscious, to help them release the fear from the subconscious level. Because if you're not dealing with the subconscious activities, the stresses that we go through day to day will be too overpowering.
Yeah.
So I did some major work for people, not too deep, but just enough for them to be able to release some emotions so that they can start to have extra capacity to cope with these additional stresses that COVID-19 is bringing to us. So usually, you know, on a very busy day or busy time, maybe you'll be looking at 15 minutes maximum.
Yes.
But I'm telling people right now, you need to focus on your mental health.
Absolutely. I mean, already I've just made a commitment to myself, is that I'm going to listen to your meditation before I go to bed tonight. No.
And of course, you've got other ones, and then you've got shorter ones that we gave out during the workshop that you attended. So you're good.
Yes, I'm good. Thank you. And just very quickly, before we bring this to a close, what else can people be doing just to calm their minds?
First of all, I'll recommend that you do not over consume the news.
Yes.
That is, you have to guard your mind.
Yeah.
Now, if you sit down and you study the news, as if you're studying for a Cambridge University exam or something, you are making your amygdala, your fear, anxiety center to go crazy on you.
Yes, yeah.
Because I wanted to know that when you sit down, for example, you're watching the BBC News, you think the BBC News is doing you a favor. No. They have their strategies to making sure that you return every day.
Yes.
And every single news is driven by some kind of fear.
Yes.
You know, they want you to take sides. They want you to compare what's going on in other countries. They want you to think, oh my goodness, I think we're going to have it bad soon.
Mm-hmm.
So before you know it, you start to catastrophize, to maximize, you start to absolutize.
Mm.
And that is when the anxiety center starts to fire your fight or flight regularly. You can't sleep, you know, you start to have nightmares. Some people will start to have flashbacks depending on the traumas they've had in the past.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that please don't consume the news too much. Keep an eye on the updates.
Yes.
But that would be irresponsible if you don't do that this time.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe tap in once, maybe twice maximum a day.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So just limit that. And I will also want to say that you do your bit to obey the government to stay at home.
Yes.
And unless you're a key worker. And the second thing is to try. We've talked about meditation every day to get it started.
Yeah.
The third thing is to try to connect with the family. If you are with people,
yes,
look at them, and it's time for you to use that time to deepen your relationships,
yes,
and to rest.
Yes.
Because those are healing factors.
Yes.
You know, a lot of us have wonderful people around us, but we never really connect with them. We never let down our guard. Even if it's just your child, yeah, if you're just by yourself and your children, look at them, take a deep breath and say, yeah, I'm so glad to have you people.
Yes.
And you are healing to my mind. You're, yeah, healing to my brain.
I'm so glad you said that. Sorry, just kind of coming on the point around children. Again, very quickly, if you don't mind, just how can we deal with this with our children? How can, you know, it's taken us a long time to get our heads around this. How do you ensure that your children are okay mentally? Because I'm fearful for my daughter that this may become that traumatic event for her that she's dealing with years and years later if I don't put the right systems in place now.
That's true. Now, history has told us that that does happen. The generation of children that came through the 9/11, September 11, the terrorist attacks in America, studies have shown that a lot of them showed PTSD symptoms growing up.
Right.
And also even with the bombing in London,
yes,
in 2005, I think, some people, yeah, around that time,
yeah,
studies have shown that some children at that time, they had nightmares, and a lot of them developed PTSD just by interacting with the madness that was going,
yes,
around,
yeah,
among the adults.
Yes.
We overcarded it. We overspoke it. We,
yes,
over-metabolized it.
Yes.
And we have to pay attention to what's going on around with regards to the children. The children are extremely sensitive.
Yes.
Between the ages 1 and 7,
yes,
the brain of a child is in a hypnotic state.
Yes.
They are consuming everything at a very deeper level.
Mm.
And because the rational brain has not fully developed, they are more likely to repress those memories if,
yes,
they can't understand it properly.
Yes.
So it's important for us to make sure that we let them understand what's going on, that we don't go crazy panicking, because they will feel that we are helping them to program,
yes,
their own internal working models, as John Bowlby,
yes,
the attachment theory, said. So we pay attention to how we regulate our own emotions, how much how we discuss it with our friends on the phones. They listen to that, so that we become that you know, properly self-regulators,
yes,
that will program our children in the right way, as opposed to kind of project our own repressed,
yes,
feelings and anger into them based on the fact that we are not dealing with the situation properly.
Yes.
So it's important for us to have, for children to have structures at the moment,
okay,
also, because that focuses their mind.
Yes.
For example, if the children are home, try to have a timetable, you know, let them know what they're doing.
Yes.
The playtime, the time that you have to work together, you have to,
yeah,
do something together in the house, the time to do some schoolwork.
Yes.
So that structure protects a younger mind.
Okay.
When there's no, okay, structure, they feed over fear a lot,
yes,
more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine also they have a lot of time to think and overthink.
Yes.
That is so useful. Thank you so much. What I'm, you know, the takeaways I'm getting from this is that, you know, personally, what we need to do is to stop ourselves irrationalizing this immediate fear and allow ourselves just to think properly and put things into perspective. Meditate. Meditation is key to calming the mind, increasing the blood flow to the mind,
yes,
not expose ourselves to so much news. Makes absolute sense. And to be careful about the messages that we're putting out there when we're around our children, providing structure for them, making sure that, I guess, that we're keeping a sense of normalcy in these,
yes,
very, very unprecedented times.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you. That is very, very useful. And I'm hoping that listeners will hear this and feel that there's something they can do with that fear and anxiety. That's exactly why I wanted you to speak. So thank you. Is there anything, what can we look forward to from Mind Body Breakthrough? What can we access?
Oh, yeah. AXA is a whole bunch of meditation materials, recovery materials, motivational material. So if you visit mindbodybreakthrough.net, mindbodybreakthrough.net, on the main page, you will see the meditation that we've been talking about.
Mm.
And also you'll be able to go around and find other free materials, especially in a lot of blogs that we've done, posts that we've done over the years.
And the 10,000 books that you've authored.
We have other books. We have online courses if you're interested to help your mind at this time, at this very challenging time. So you find a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Okay, brilliant. Okay.
And also, if you can like Wale Oladipo YouTube channel, you also will be getting some motivation once a week.
Yeah,
that will keep you going.
Oh, I'll make sure I share that too. Okay, that's brilliant. Yeah. I don't want to take up any more of your evening. We know we've got to go and hear what Boris has said as well. So thank you again. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family.
Thank you so much for having me. You're doing a fantastic job. Keep going.
Take care.
Thank you. All the best.